Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Theatergoers, you should know that City National Bank is Broadway's bank. Since 1954, City National has been passionate about the performing arts and is proud to be the official bank of the 2019 Tony Awards, the role of a lifetime. City National spotlights relationships. In fact, to them, financial success is not about who you know, but how well they know you. From business to personal banking, they're your single financial source. Find out how City National is the way up for Broadway at cnb.com. That's cnb.com. City National Bank, member FDIC, is a subsidiary of Royal Bank of Canada. Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes at the Tony Awards. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to James Corden, the host of the 73rd annual Tony Awards. America at large knows Corden best as the host of The Late Late Show on CBS, but theatergoers got to know him first, both in the UK and here in the US, where he was in the original Broadway cast of The History Boys in 2006, and then he won a Tony Award for his performance in One Man, Two Governors in 2012. Since then, of course, The Late Late Show has been keeping him busy, but he's back on Broadway for one night only this Sunday. It'll mark his second time emceeing the Tonys, after he hosted the awards in 2016, and he took a little time out of his crazy week of pre-ceremony prep to take us behind the curtain for a glimpse at everything that goes into pulling together Broadway's biggest night. Hi, James.
Hey.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm talking to you midweek. This episode is going to come out on Friday, but yes. I'm talking to you midweek, the week before the Tony Awards.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, the sprintiest part of the sprint on the way to the ceremony. What was your day today? Tell me about where you are in the process.
Oh, man. It's, we've been working on the Tony Awards now for 3 months, 4 months, working on what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, you know, and that's...
And who's we?
Myself and the exec producer and my best friend of The Late Late Show, Ben Winston,
yep.
And Glenn and Ricky.
Yep. Who they are the producers of the Tony telecast.
Producers and direct the Tonys and have done for many years.
Yep.
And a wonderful lyricist called David Jabberbaum, who used to work on The Late Late Show. Mm-hmm. Before that, he worked on The Daily Show. He wrote the lyrics to the opening song that I did in 2016.
Right.
And a wonderful composer called Tom Kitt, who is...
who? People would know him.
Sure.
Yes.
who has done the score and the music for this song.
For listeners who actually don't know who Tom Kitt is, that's he wrote Next to Normal and a lot of other things.
He's incredible.
He's also an excellent orchestrator.
He's an incredible musician and composer. And so we've been working for a long time on that. Then there's like, it's a strange thing, the Tony Awards, because you can really fixate on the first 10 minutes of the show. Because, you know, there is an expectation to do a big musical
opening number. Yeah.
You know, the open we did last time, mm-hmm. I just loved it. I had just an absolute ball doing it. And so then you're like, well, that, okay, well, now we've got to try and beat that with something else that people might enjoy. So we started with a dance rehearsal. Myself, Rob Ashford, who is directing and choreographing the number, who is
long-time Broadway talent and just London and elsewhere.
One of the greatest people you could ever wish to collaborate with anything on. Every time I'm sort of in his orbit, I'm bowled over by him, if I'm honest. And so we've been talking for a long time about the open, and then so today we did the dancing. We worked on like the choreography, the dancing with our sort of, if you like, our company of perhaps, I think, 12 dancers.
Okay, yeah.
And then we then had maybe like 100 people arrive in the lobby of Radio City Music Hall. We're working out the end of this song, and I would say there was two or three times I could have burst into tears. Probably because I'm tired.
I was going to say out of exhaustion or joy.
No, I think but maybe because I'm tired, but mostly because I'm bowled over by the enthusiasm and willingness to participate from the companies of these shows who are already doing 8 shows a week. I find it inspiring, actually, their attitude towards the entire thing. And it was a joy. So we did that, and then costume fitting, and then I had to have like a, you know, tux fitting and things, which is always quite depressing for me, because there will always be a conversation happening behind your back about quite how much there is to let out at the end. And then I came here, and then I'm going to go back after this.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you going to go back after this? Okay.
I'll go back, not to Radio City. I'll go back to a meeting room with some of our writers. And then tomorrow it starts to become a kind of press. So I think I do like Howard Stern. And then we go to the orchestra and work it out with a huge orchestra. So I think Tom might be there now, and then we'll figure that out tomorrow.
Right.
And then we're rehearsing another bit of the show with some people I don't want to give away, but it's for a bit in the middle of the show, which we have to rehearse, which is incredibly ambitious. We're going to try and do a little sort of 2.5 minute kind of one shot segment, which may or may not fall away depending on how this goes.
Right.
So it's a lot. But it's brilliant. It's wonderful. It is. I'm very excited to host it again.
When did you start rehearsals in earnest? Like here in town, starting with the
Yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've just got this week, right?
Yeah. So we started yesterday.
Right. Yesterday being Monday. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much, from an outsider's perspective, it feels like emceeing an award show is an entirely different thing from, your gig on the Late Late Show, but also they have some similarities, it seems. Is that at all true?
I guess it's similar in a sense if you're thinking, what will people want to see? Will this be fun?
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, our show is, there's another one tomorrow. So
that sure is true.
And it's not live.
Right.
So on our show, if we're going to try and do a big musical opening monologue or whatever, if I slip over or the entire thing falls apart, you can go, well, let's do it again.
Start over.
This is just absolutely live and happening right there. And there, and that is where the feeling of nausea comes from.
This feels entirely different to you?
It couldn't feel more different. This is a beast of kind of epic proportions where I couldn't sleep last night through just fear and sort of worry, really, because there's so many things that could go wrong, and that's just it. But that's also the thing that makes it the most thrilling and the most exciting.
Is it related at all to that feeling you get before you go on stage for when you would go on stage for One Man, Two Governors or something like that?
Well, so I'm
it's like that times a million. Or?
Well, I'm a fan of nerves. Yeah. I like nerves. I think nerves are good. Mm. I think nerves, and I experience them almost to a sort of crippling degree. But I think it's because you're only ever nervous when something matters. Mm. You're only nervous when you want to do your best. You're never nervous for something that, it doesn't matter, you know? So, I mean, the nerves I felt... One Man, Two Governors is probably maybe the most nervous I've ever felt in the first preview at the National Theatre. Where even thinking about it now makes my sort of stomach turn, where I... Because the play would begin, and then my character would enter about sort of 7 or 8 minutes into the first scene. So I would have 7 or 8 minutes just stood on my own behind a door, and the rest of the cast is on stage, and...
Or are you standing behind the door that will open with...
I would stand behind the door, and that's where I sort of really started to encounter some incredibly ridiculous obsessive compulsive disorders of like certain things that I do in a certain way and routine and things and stuff. There was I'd take something out of my pocket and put it on a shelf, and I would move something to somewhere else, all these things, because you're just trying to eliminate doubt.
Right.
That's all you're trying to do. That's all those things are, is just eliminate doubt from your body.
Yeah.
I'll be beyond nervous on Sunday night. I will be, you know, I'll really be in a
state.
For a bit.
You mentioned this. You last hosted in 2016, which was memorable for a number of reasons. First of all, it was the year of Hamilton, and that was what everyone was talking about. But what I remember most vividly is that year I went to the dress rehearsal, which is a thing that is a lot of fun. But that year, I remember all of us standing in line waiting to get to the Radio City. We were all getting these news alerts about a shooting that turned out to be the Pulse shooting in Orlando. What do you remember? I remember being so impressed by how you ended up handling it.
Thanks.
Both in the rehearsal and even more importantly in the telecast itself. What do you remember about those moments and sort of when you figured out that it would have to be acknowledged and what went into figuring out how you did that?
Well, I remember it incredibly vividly, actually. Yeah. It became absolutely clear that we had to talk about it. And there was, I remember at one point, and I don't remember who had mentioned it, but I remember the people were starting to say that they were going to mention it during the In Memoriam package of the show, and myself and Ben felt incredibly passionate that that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Incredibly passionate. We were like, this is completely wrong. We cannot wait 2 hours into a show like this to talk about something so monumental, so tragic, the thing that everybody is talking about. We think we should talk about it at the very top of the show. I think the absolute top of the show. We will acknowledge it. We will talk about it. We will talk about it as eloquently as we can. And then we will carry on. So then Ben had already started jotting down some notes during the dress run of things to say. And then he and I talked, and we talked mainly about feelings. What is the feeling in the room? And I remember saying to Ben, like, that this is a community. This is a theatre full of people representing a community that has never excluded anybody. They have welcomed everyone. Nobody is excluded from this gang, if you like.
Right.
That this is a group of people that say, come and we will welcome you here and we'll put our arms around you, regardless of gender, race, sexuality, anything at all. We are open to you. And so we were like, that's what we should say.
That
this is a place which is always, and that hate won't win, and that's all. So then we wrote it,
right?
And then talking about that, if we're talking about that 20 minutes before the show where there's nothing you can do, I went and lay down, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I lay down and I had put a sweater over my eyes.
Yeah, right.
Because it was too bright in my room. And I thought, in 20 minutes' time, we're going to talk about America's biggest mass shooting. Then we're going to do a parody of Hamilton. And then I'm going to tell like 4 jokes. And then we're going to do this 7-minute musical number, which at this moment we have never done 100% successfully. And I remember thinking, this will 100% define how this night goes. This next 15 minutes will determine what the feeling is like in this room. And that was a really strange sort of feeling, really. Yeah. That I thought, well, if this goes wrong, I don't know if the show will recover, really. Of course it will on one level, but will it be the celebration that it should be,
right,
that it could be, given what a monumental year on Broadway that had been, you know?
Right. Yeah. What did you learn overall from that last time hosting the Tonys that you are glad to know now as you're doing it this time?
That you've just got to enjoy it. Mm. Like, you've got to be in it and enjoying it at that moment there and then. Like, you've got to enjoy the whole night. Don't enjoy it retroactively.
Okay.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Don't look back on it and go, oh, I wish I'd enjoyed it more.
Right.
Like, I might never host this show again. I might never be asked to. So let's just try and enjoy it and make the entire night feel like what it is, which I think is a celebration of, per square mile, the most talented people in the world who are just so gifted, it's ridiculous. And we're going to celebrate every single one of them. Every single one of them. And jump in and enjoy the fact that this is on television. Enjoy the fact that it's there and we're doing it. And like, even like last time, which I think I might do this time again, we had a pianist and a mm-hmm. songbook, and I was just getting people to sing karaoke in the commercial break.
Oh, right, I remember that, yeah.
Because... Yeah. You're like, I don't ever want the air to leave this room.
Right.
I don't want the commercial break to just be people going, so anyway. So I said to John, yeah. Oh, hang on, it's back. You want it to be like, no, we're going to be in this the whole time. It's going to be a romp.
Right.
This is going to be fun from start to finish. Yeah. There's never, ever going to be a let up in that, you know?
Right.
And I'll try and do it again. It's a bigger room. It's a less intimate room. So we'll
yeah.
see, you know?
Yeah.
I'll be back with more from James Corden right after this. With an unrivaled passion for the performing arts, City National Bank is the way up for Broadway. With a 65-year commitment to the entertainment industry, they have unique insight that other banks do not. Center stage, backstage, offstage, City National works behind the scenes, helping others to elevate their performance. The official bank of the 2019 Tony Awards, City National proudly backs Broadway and all of its supporting casts. Get to know them better at cnb.com. That's cnb.com. City National Bank, member FDIC, is a subsidiary of Royal Bank of Canada. And we're back with more from James Corden.
Tell me about how... We've talked a little bit about your gig on The Late Late Show, but because that has... It's not live, as you mentioned, but it has a kind of live...
For sure.
Kind of feel
yeah.
to
oh,
it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
In what ways did your work in the theater kind of prep you for the stuff you do on The Late Late Show?
Oh, in every way. Yeah. In every way. In mostly in discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet. Because
of
it's
just
a,
the routine yeah. of doing a show every day. Like, that's the thing. And it's funny, you know, I see from time to time other late night hosts, yeah. and we all talk about how tired we are.
Sure.
But I often think this is nothing compared to the tiredness that I felt doing One Man, Two Governors. Like, that was genuinely, I was sort of in pain when I would wake up in the morning,
right,
from just the sheer sort of physicality of it.
Yeah.
And doing that 8 times a week was just an absolute grind, you know. And yeah. And lots of people sort of ask, oh, well, how is it different? And of course it's different, the Late Late Show, in basically every way.
Sure.
But I often say to people that the highs of hosting that show will never be as high as doing One Man, Two Governors. It just won't. It can't. Nothing can, I don't think. I don't know if I'll ever experience a feeling like I would have sometimes doing that show. But by the same token, the lows are never as low as when you as when you're in Plymouth, right, on a Wednesday afternoon and it's raining and it's right, show 387, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
What was it about that show in particular that means so much to you?
Oh, man. Well, it just... I just don't know if I'll ever play a better part than that. I don't know if I will. I hope to, right, but I do think that would be a miracle, because the entire thing of playing that character of Francis, yeah, is the play refuses, the way that Richard Bean wrote Act One of, right, that play. It basically refuses to allow the audience not to root for this guy.
Right.
Like,
yep,
from the second he walks on, you're falling, flipping backwards over a chair, doing, mm-hmm, a thing. Then you're swallowing a cigarette. Then you're eating a letter. Then you're having a fight with yourself. Then, you know what I mean? Then you're going to pull someone up out the order. Then all of those things, right, all of the interactions, all of that stuff, to the point where then you get to this 23-minute dinner scene at the end of Act One, which some nights, and I will say particularly that I remember the nights at the Music Box more than I think I do,
oh,
at the Adelphi or the National, in a, yeah, way, maybe because they're just, but I think American audiences are more enthusiastic,
yes,
I think. And there were moments doing that scene where I would think, if I could stay in this minute forever, I would stay here.
Your first time on Broadway was back in, I looked it up, 2006,
yeah,
was History Boys.
Yeah.
I can't believe it was that long ago. What, and as we mentioned, you had a Broadway run in One Man, Two Governors. How do you think of Broadway as a place and as a community? And
I love it. I love it so much. I do. I think it's the best place that you can go and work, you know. I think there's a million things wrong with it, which I can tell you about, sure, whenever you want, but sure, I think what makes it great is the people. Mm. It's funny, when we were in London doing the History Boys,
yeah,
we were at the National Theatre, and, yeah, and lots of people kept talking to us about this Broadway community.
Mm.
And we didn't really know what that meant, really, because if you're in London, you're not in such close proximity.
Right.
So it's very difficult to have a feeling of community, because if you're in a play at the Haymarket and I'm in a play at Drury Lane, our paths are never going to cross. We're never going to drink in the same place. But here, on this, what is it, 8 blocks, 12 blocks?
Yeah, 12 blocks, yeah.
Backing onto each other and the same, you know, whether you're at Angus,
yeah, McIndoe, sadly departed, yes.
Has it gone now?
Oh, yes.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. That's really taken the wind out of my sails.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to hear that.
Because that was us.
Yeah, it's been a few years now. Right.
That was where we would
you were right across
be
the street,
in that,
right,
alley.
Yeah.
That alleyway.
I believe I met you once in that alley.
We were there, yeah, every single night.
Yeah.
That was it. And then, you know, like, when I went to see The Prom the other day, mm-hmm, Christopher Seaver said, do you remember those parties we used to have and I was like, when he was in Spamalot,
yeah,
on a Friday or Saturday night, they would have this drinks thing in the alley behind the Schubert, and it's just glorious. Like, I have had some of the greatest nights of my life in Bar Central.
Yep.
Just the proximity of doing it, the closeness of the people, the feeling of we're all in this together is, I think, the thing that makes it alive and vibrant and incredible.
Looking ahead, how do you think of theater sort of fitting into your career overall?
Oh, and I hope so much that that's something that I will still get to do. If I'm honest, it's the only thing I miss.
Mm.
I don't really miss filming television shows or films, really.
Right. Yeah.
I don't hanker for it, because I feel like I know what that is, and I know that, like, you know, I don't know what Brad Pitt was shooting today, right, but there's a strong chance that his day's acting was like getting out of a car.
Right. Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Turnover, sound speed, action, open the door, look left, look right, walk off. Okay, right, let's stop down, let's do it again.
Right.
Okay, Brad, maybe look right and then, okay, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And look, I'm a huge fan of film. I love it. But there's a really, really good, I don't know if we're allowed to plug other theatrical podcasts.
Why not? Let's do it.
There is an absolutely brilliant, brilliant podcast that the Royal Court do, which Simon Stevens talks to different playwrights. So Simon Stevens, who wrote Curious Incident, The Dog in the Nighttime.
Yep.
And there's a brilliant one where he's talking to Jez Butterworth, who think is...
Yeah, who you'll see on Sunday.
Yeah, and I consider him a very dear friend of mine, and I think he is one of the greatest playwrights alive. Mm. I just do. And there's a really interesting point where Jez has written lots of films. He's written The Bonds. He's written stuff like that. And Simon has never ventured into that world.
Right.
And Jez says in that thing, and it's a really wonderful thing, that's why I attribute it to him, I don't want anyone to think that it's me, but he says, I don't really know when film happens. He goes, does it happen when you're writing it? Well, not really, because you're just writing it. Does it happen when you're shooting it, but you're not, because you're shooting it out of sequence and you're perhaps never telling the story? Does it happen when you're editing it, but then everybody else is gone and they're not around?
Mm.
And maybe it happens when it comes out, but by the time it comes out, everybody's working on something else. So when does it actually happen? And you can never say that about a play or a musical or any theatrical experience. It's like, you know when it's happening, and it's happening right now. And that's why you're there. You're there to be part of a collective experience. So I will be deeply disappointed in myself if I don't pursue a life or a part of my life to be in the theatre when this ridiculous job I'm doing now ends.
Much longer is it? How much longer are you up for being in it?
Well, I mean, there is the question that I'm asked almost daily at the moment.
Yeah. Because you're coming to the, what is it, one more year on your contract or something?
I have a
like
year
that.
Left. Yeah, yeah. And
at some point you'll decide whether you want to do more, right?
Yeah, it's a hard. Yeah, it's because, but it's so much more than just what do I want to do?
Right.
Because, you know, we're a long way from home, my wife and I, and our children, and there are people at home that we miss deeply and we care about, and they're getting older.
Yeah,
and then there's a question of where do we want to educate our children and where would the best environment for them to be and. And all of those things. So I've always looked upon the show, I've always looked upon the Late Late Show, even before I started, as that it would just be a moment. And I knew it would be a pivotal moment. I always knew it would be. Like, good or bad, success or failure, this is a moment.
Right.
But I always knew it would just be that. I never thought... I've never seen myself going, oh, well, I'll just be doing this for 25 years. And I understand why it would be, but I just, you know, I think you've got to be really careful to not get too into money.
Mm-hmm.
I think can be a really dangerous thing if you are seeking new creative endeavors, you know?
Yeah.
So I hope... And listen, I'm saying this, I don't even know if that door will be open to me when this is done. It's not for, it absolutely isn't for me to decide to say, well, when I finish this show, I shall I shall go back to the theatre. Is that where they might not want me? So I have to be open to the notion that when I finish this show, that might be it. And I might just slip away and just be a sort of footnote. Or I'll be a memory for someone to go, I wonder what happened to that guy. Yeah. I have to make peace with that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think you're either like a mountain climber or you're a mountain observer.
Right.
And if you sit too long on a mountain, you might become an observer, and you always want to go, well, is there something else I can climb? Is there something else I can do? And I sort of felt like doing the show in itself was kind of a punk move.
Yeah.
I always will be drawn to, what's the punk move? Is it going to do a play at the West Yorkshire Playhouse?
Right.
Is it doing something off Broadway? Is it trying to direct something? Is it trying to write something? Who knows? But I do know that I would seek that in the theatre.
Right. Great. You've never been in a musical on Broadway?
No.
If you were to star in one tomorrow, which one would it be?
Well, I would hope it would be something new.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been a few different moments sort of in my life where I've gone down a road of talks to think about potentially doing a musical. There was a moment where it looked like I might do A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Oh yeah.
Which I think is an incredible part. I really, really do. I don't know if you could do that show today. I'm not 100% convinced, but I do think that is a wonderful part. I really do.
Right.
A show which has always meant a great deal to me, and I don't know why, because I don't think it's perfect by any stretch at all,
right,
is a musical called Kiss of the Spider Woman.
Oh yeah.
Which I saw when I was at school. I was 15 and I saw it at the Shaftesbury Theatre with Brent Carver and Cheetah Rivera,
yeah,
and wow, Anthony Crivello.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And I was just like beyond moved by like Brent Carver's performance in that show.
Yeah.
Like that She's a Woman song, I think, is one of the most underrated in musicals, and I really people ask me now for I'm sure kind of obvious reasons, what do I listen to in the car?
Right.
And I'll often just be singing that song in a car.
Right.
I love that. But then at the same time, you know, if someone came to me and said, do you and Jim Parsons want to do The Producers on Broadway? I would probably drop everything to go and do it, you know?
Right.
So
you hear that, Jim Parsons?
Well, we've talked about it before. Yeah. Never seriously, just jokingly. Right. Like, that would be a fun.
Sure would.
That would be a fun thing to do, you know. So I don't know really. I would love to do something that's completely sort of out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Nathan Lane said last year at the Tonys, in Nathan Lane's speech, I'm going to get it wrong what he said, but he said something along the lines of, I think he thanked his partner for allowing him to go on a journey to see if the thing he thought was there might be.
Mm-hmm.
And that play, doing Angels in America at the National,
right,
was kind of the start of that journey. And I don't know why, but it kind of floored me when I was sat on a couch where I thought, I know exactly what you're talking about, which is, I wonder if the thing I think is in there, I wonder if it's there because I've scratched the surface at this, and I know there is a world where I can be this Nathan Lane,
right,
that you've seen and know very, very well.
Right.
But I wonder if I can explore a different strand of my abilities and push myself a little.
Yeah.
And that really spoke to me a lot, and I would hope so much that I would be brave enough, should opportunities like that come my way, to explore a different side of myself and be able to be comfortable in something so uncomfortable,
right.
You know,
yeah.
For both the audience and me,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I like the idea of figuring that out, you know?
Yeah. Well, we can't wait to see what that is.
When
well,
who knows?
Whenever you
I don't know.
It, out,
it might,
right?
Never might never exist. But you yeah. know what I'm saying? Like, you know.
Yeah. Before you leave us and get back to work, leave us with a tantalizing teaser for Sunday night.
It's... well, I mean, look, I hope it's going to be fun. I do. I hope so much. But the opening number that we're doing is... We've left no stone unturned to try and make something worthy of the people in that room. That's mainly it. And it's live. And because it's live, it's going to be alive.
Yeah.
And that is a great thing. Is that all right?
That's perfect. Well, thank you. Thanks for taking the time. It was
so
great to chat with you, James.
Thank you so much.
We'll see you Sunday.
That was James Corden, who'll be hosting the 2019 Tony Awards this Sunday, June 9th, airing live from Radio City Music Hall at 8 p.m. Eastern on CBS. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, we'd so appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, or tell a friend you think might enjoy the show too. Next week, I'll be back in my usual Tuesday slot with Thomas Schumacher, the president and producer of Disney Theatrical Productions, a Broadway powerhouse that's celebrating its 25th birthday this year. Thanks for listening, and until then, see you at the theater. The official bank of the 2019 Tony Awards, City National Bank, helps Broadway perform at the highest levels. From business to personal banking, they are your single financial source. City National is a strategic financial provider who understands and supports the Broadway community. And they're part of the Royal Bank of Canada, which is another name you can trust. City National Bank is the way up for Broadway. Find out how they can help you on your way up at cnb.com. That's cnb.com. City National Bank, member FDIC, is a subsidiary of Royal Bank of Canada.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.